May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. So when I first read through all of the readings for this week, my first reaction is, no one told me it was woe to you who are rich Sunday. I wondered if perhaps Stewardship Sunday had come early. Because our readings this week are full of warnings about the dangers of wealth, full of warnings to the wealthy. The easy way out for me would be to preach a real fire and brimstone sermon all about those who have extravagant wealth and who spend it on frivolous things. We can all probably think of some celebrity examples, and I could use them, and we could all be feeling morally superior to all those billionaires who don't use their wealth in constructive ways. Problem with that is it's mostly vanity, because I don't think that's any of you here. If it is, please see me after worship, because we've got a stewardship campaign coming up. And the problem with preaching that sermon to a group of deeply faithful Christians who are moderately well off is that mostly what it creates is a lot of misplaced guilt. Now, guilt is a useful emotion. If you are feeling guilty because there's money in your bank account and you haven't quite gotten around to writing the pledge check for the church, I encourage you to respond to that guilt. But most of the time when we hear these admonitions against wealth, against the behavior of the wealthy, what we hear and what we feel is guilt that even though we are trying, we are not good enough. We are not giving enough. Because let's face it, Jesus puts a really high bar on us. In just a couple of weeks, we're going to hear the story of the rich young man who comes to Jesus and says, "What must I do?" And Jesus says, "Give away everything that you have and follow me." And that's kind of the bar most of us are thinking of when we hear these stories and these admonitions about wealth. Is, okay, what Jesus wants is me to sell all my possessions, live in a tent, and work among the poor. And every single one of us is here going, "Yeah, I'm just not going to do that. I've got kids to go through college, I've got a mortgage to pay, I want a roof over my head." And yet, we hear these stories and we hear that nudge and that call to do more. And that's a call we should hear and honor, but we shouldn't make it a source of guilt. And I think that's what the writer of the first letter to Timothy is wrestling with. Is he too has heard this call to abandon all of the things that have held him back, to give his whole life to God, to give everything he owns in service of the poor. And he's surrounded by people who also really love this Jesus and have heard the good news and want to do that. And they're wrestling with what that looks like in the real world, where it's often helpful if you have a family, if you can keep feeding them. Where there is no one who will necessarily take care of the people you're responsible for if you simply sell everything you have to follow Jesus. But there is something between there, and the writer of 1 Timothy wants us to hear it. He wants us to hear that it's a matter of priorities. It's a matter of understanding what we are pursuing and who we are following and what is our first thought and our first priority. Is it our careers, wealth, having a good life? Or is it God? Is it longing to live in God's kingdom, longing to
follow Jesus? And is that our first priority? So the writer of 1 Timothy offers us some very good advice. Some good advice about what we should pursue and what we should be aware of the temptations of which wealth tends to do that. And anybody who has ever worked for a living knows the temptation to make work and all those other busyness in our life the first priority. And it's an ongoing struggle. But that's not actually what today's gospel is about. Jesus is not actually talking about the people who wouldn't sell everything. He's talking about a man who knows what his priority is, and it's him. The rich man in our parable today has no time for other people. He's too busy planning great feasts that he enjoys. He's too busy wearing his Sunday best every single day. He has more than enough, and he's not interested in sharing. And he's not interested in sharing even though there is the opportunity right on his very doorstep. Even though every single day he comes right past an opportunity to do what God calls us all to do, to use our abundance, to use the blessings we have received in order to bless others. He knows this guy well enough, and he knows his name. Lazarus, by the way, the only character in any parable to have a name. And the rich man knows the beggar at his doorstep well enough to know his name. And yet, it never occurred to him to ask, is there something I could do? What do I have left over that I could do? Because as Jesus says, the poor man, poor Lazarus, would have been content with the crumbs falling off his table. He wasn't looking for much. They were crumbs that the rich man, if he had just seen Lazarus, just genuinely seen him there, could have done. The rich man's sin isn't that he's rich. It's that he's blind. And here's the thing about that guilt that I didn't want you all to go home feeling today, is in my experience, guilt over the blessings God has given us, feeling guilty about the abundance that we already have, often makes us shut our eyes just as thoroughly as the rich man shut his eyes to Lazarus. Because we all know of the deep needs of the world. We all see on the news, we see when we go down to serve the Elliott meal, we see when we listen to the stories of our friends and neighbors, we know that the world has this deep, desperate need, and all of our abundance is just a drop in the bucket of that need. And then we combine it with guilt that we have so much, and what we end up doing is closing our eyes to whoever it is that is just beyond our gate. Because we just cannot bear to see all this need and know we can't solve it. And so we become, if we are not careful, just like the rich man. Not because we started out being greedy and self-centered, but because in misplaced guilt, we decided we could no longer bear to see the suffering of the world. And that's what we should hear in this parable. That's what we should hear in 1 Timothy's letter, is an invitation to see the need of the world at our doorstep. We should, despite the fact it breaks our hearts and makes us weak, listen to the stories of those who are suffering. We should pay attention. beautiful it makes us feel. When others want to tell us stories about the ways they find themselves oppressed and marginalized and mistreated. Because there are plenty of those stories on our doorstep. If you look, you Google refugees, you will have a week's worth of stories of people in desperate circumstances, in desperate need. If you sit with the people at the Elliott meal, you will hear people who will tell you about the struggles of working and not making enough, of being disabled and not being able to get a job, of trying to figure out a way out after a cycle of addiction and relapse and recovery. If you stop and listen to the voices of Black men and women whose encounters with the police have not been like most of our encounters with the police, you will hear brokenness and struggle that needs to be repented of and addressed. If we listen to those who are afraid of all the different dangers that beset us, you will listen and hear the brokenness of the world crying out to be met, to be healed. And it is incredibly hard. And yet it is what we are called to do. Because we have been given a wealth of resources and blessings and abundance with which we can bring a drop of water to cool a thirsting tongue. We have been given here and now an opportunity to make just the slightest difference in all of that grief of the world. We may not be able to solve all the problems, but we can be known as followers of Jesus, as people of generosity and sharing, people who do good works because we have heard the cries of the suffering at our gate and on our doorstep. The great temptation is to say, we can't do it, to turn inward, to throw a party and drown out the sounds of that suffering. Because carrying the weight of the world and the brokenness of the world in our hearts is indeed a cross to take up. But don't do it out of guilt. That's not what we're aiming for. Do it because that's what God invites and calls us into. To having the courage to listen to those voices, to respond when we discover we are able. And we may be surprised at how many places that is. We may be surprised by the healing we can bring to the world. Because we have Jesus on our side. Because we can be those people who inspire others to do their bit. And a little in abundance is a lot. Do not live with the guilt of God's blessings. Live with the joy that He has given us an opportunity to make a difference, to be the people who can do good works, who can be voices for the oppressed. Live with the joy that Jesus has called us, so that sooner or later we're in the bosom of Father Abraham. And let us truly, truly love God, abandon our ivory couches. And if you have one of those, I'd love to see it. Abandon our ivory couches and do the work God has given us to do. Amen.
Amen.